He served at the Pentagon as an Army JAG. He graduated from Notre Dame and has two law degrees from Boston University and Georgetown University. He's been practicing law for over 30 years. He's your family's personal attorney. It's time for the David Carrier Show.
Hello and welcome to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. You have found the place where we talk about estate planning, elder law, real estate, and business law. And lucky you, you tuned in for our Valentine's Day special. What does that mean? Well, not much, really. It's just that it's the last one before Valentine's Day, and we want to remind you to come to the Valentine's Day workshop if you haven't been already. We do all kinds of neat stuff at the Valentine's Day workshop, which we haven't decided what that's going to be yet, but it'll be neat. Promise. The other thing we do for Valentine's Day is visit the families that we've worked with and helped out with the long-term care. And so we'll be making the rounds of the our team members. Well, not me personally. I'm doing those workshops. But team members will be visiting the local facilities and, you know, bringing flowers to our folks. And here's what we decided to do this year is just to say, hey, if you've got a loved one in a long-term care facility, right, if you've got a loved one, and you'd like us to stop by and, you know, just, I mean, we're not passing out cards here, okay? It's just, you know, we're there, we've got the flowers, and we'd be more than happy to, you know, drop one by if you'd like us to, okay? It's just in and out. This is not... I got somebody said, oh, yeah, you're going to be passing out all this propaganda. It's like, no, I mean, we're not even, it's just flowers. That's all we're doing. And, you know, one of those, you know, one of those Kitty Valentines, that kind of thing. So just give us a, you know, if you email me with, you know, david@davidcarrierlaw.com, just email me with the facility, the person's name, and the room number, okay? And we'll just, hi, how you doing? Here you go. See you later. Boom. Out we go. Okay? And so that's, you know, that's something we're just doing. If you'd like to participate, well, we'd like to do that. That's no problem. Okay. We're talking to Don. Don's on the line. He called 888-463-2843. You can, too. And, Don, let me see if I can recap what we're talking about. Your daughter, I guess it is, and her husband are buying a house on short sale. It's taken about a year, which is not unusual. Short sales take forever for the bank to get satisfied on all the particulars. And now we're supposed to go to closing in the next couple of days, but the seller now says they need an additional $8,000, and we can't really figure out why. Is that about right?
That's pretty much it in a nutshell, yep.
Okay.
Actually, the closing was supposed to be Friday, and that was early Friday that the dual agent called and said that they miscalculated somehow. I can't understand how they could have the date of the closing all settled and then all of a sudden figure out that they were off $8,000. But, yeah, the sellers were refinancing their current home in order to cover the difference. They'd gotten some kind of a settlement from a work injury or something, and like you said, they either saw the market improved or they are having different second thoughts. I don't know, but they decided not to let their credit get bad, is what the agent said, and that they made payments, and that's kind of delayed.
But you see, wait a second. Time out again. Because, you know, banks just don't willy-nilly do short sales, okay? A bank is going to do a short sale, and what bank are we talking about? It's not Bank of America, or is it? Or which bank?
I'm not exactly sure.
Doesn't really matter. Okay, doesn't really matter.
The property in Wellston.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. The reason a bank does a short sale, right, is because we've got somebody who can't make the payments, isn't making the payments, and rather than foreclose on them and go through that whole rigmarole, instead of that, what they're willing to do is say, look, we couldn't have gotten more than $50,000 out of the property anyway. You've got someone who's going to give us the $50,000 without going through all the hoopla. Okay, fine, give us the $50,000 and we'll... But it takes forever to convince the bank that they're going to get more money by going through the short sale route than by doing a foreclosure. And banks hate it because if the word gets out that, oh, yeah, it's no big deal, you know, they'll just, you know, if you can't make your payments, they'll just give you the... They'll just let you sell it. I mean, that would be terrible for the banks because then people wouldn't have any,
right.
You know, so
kind of pay.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. So this notion that, well, they've been still making the payments?
That's what the agent said.
Just to keep their credit? Hey, listen, a short sale explodes your credit. Okay? It's just the least worst alternative. That's why people do short sale. You know, it's the least worst thing to happen. And so, I don't know. It's just not, that's not adding up either. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying necessarily, I'm not saying necessarily that a bank wouldn't in some circumstances do a short sale, even if they were still making the payments, if there were other you know, other things going on, if there were other factors going on, they might do it. It's not a never ever happen, but you know.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. I don't think they know who the actual mortgage company is or something, because they've never been able to contact them. Everything's always been done through this dual agent. And so he would call them and tell them when something's changed. And it's just in the last month they were kept wondering why it kept working so long, because he said the paperwork was all in, you know, everything was approved by the bank. And finally he called and said, well, you know, they were going to go to closing. They decided to keep paying, they kept paying the payments, and that's the reason why they didn't, short sale couldn't take place, is because it had to be over 30 days or 90 days late or some one of those type of things. So, and now all of a sudden, you know, the whole, they were going to close, they were going to, you know, fix their credit and this kind of stuff. And it's like, this is all kind of weird. Let's late in the game. And I don't know if they should, like, bypass this agent and try to contact the mortgage company and see what's going on, or if they should send a letter first before they.
Yeah. Yeah. There's lots of possibilities. And, you know, here's the thing. It could all be, it might all be straight as an arrow. It might all be just, it may be no problem. You know, it may just be one of those weird things, but that's really okay. Okay, that could happen, right? That might be the case. But the problem is, and this is especially true with the dual agency, you don't know what he's not telling you. Because in a dual agency, they can't tell you everything they know, right? You're not supposed to. If your daughter gave the agent we can go to this far but no further, okay? If she says that, and they're negotiating a price that's lower, right? But they say, well, you know, we're trying to get we'd like to buy it for 100, but we might go to 105. He's not supposed to tell the other side of his brain that they can go to 105, right?
Right.
And if that guy's willing to take 95, he's not supposed to tell the other half of his brain that he goes to, you know what I mean? It's just,
exactly.
You put the agent in a very, very difficult, schizophrenic, I don't mean to use schizophrenic in the technical term, apologies to schizophrenics. You know,
you're playing two sides.
Yeah. And it goes, you know, and what did I say before? You know, there's nothing new under the sun. I mean, it's all in the Bible. Can't serve two masters, right? I mean, that's just humanity. That's the way people are. You can't serve, I mean, this is my view, you can't serve two masters. You can't, I mean, how can you really, you know, effectively represent both sides? And in a situation like this, where, as I say, the agent may be as straight arrow as Robin Hood, okay? He may be just telling it exactly correct. But where's your confidence that he's telling exactly correct? Because you know he's serving the other master.
Yeah. You got to trust but verify, and there's just no way to verify.
There's no way to verify. And in a trust relationship, the notion that the trust works in two directions is, how can you do that? You know, I've got a case coming up. And the way the law works is, if you represent the trustee, okay, you don't. Let's say you're the attorney and you're representing a trustee. Okay, your duty of loyalty, and this is one of the great things about Michigan law, because your duty of loyalty runs to the trustee. It doesn't run to the beneficiaries. It doesn't run to the memory of the person who created the trust way back when. It runs to the fiduciary, the person who's acting as patient advocate, who's acting as agent, who's acting as trustee. That's where your duty of loyalty runs, not to some general concept, but to that individual carrying out that job. Now, it's your responsibility as the attorney to let that person know the parameters in which they can work, right? They can't lie, you know, all those sorts of things. But it's not, you're not balancing, well, you know, they say this and that's kind of reasonable, and this one says this and that's kind of reasonable. Blah, blah, blah. Forget it. You can't do that. You can't. So it says, look, you represent the person who occupies the trustee position or the patient advocate position or the agent under the power of attorney. That's who you represent. That's where your loyalty lies, and operate from there. This dual agency stuff is just flies in the face of human nature, seems to me. Well, thanks for the call, Don. I'm getting the high sign here. We've got to get out. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
You make me feel so young. You make me feel so spring has sprung. And every time to find that I'm forsaken. If you're a fantasy, then I'm content to be in love with lovely.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show, and I'm content to be talking to lovely you. That's right. 888-463-2843. That's the number to call. 888-463-2843, and we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. Easy to do. Just do it. You can also email us, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. That's david@davidcarrierlaw.com. Or go to the website, guess what that is, davidcarrierlaw.com, and we'll get your question, comment, or concern on the air. And you can go to the website, sign up for one of our free life plan workshops. Now, those are the ones that we do every single week, the good Lord brings, and twice on holidays, which means twice on Valentine's Day. Yes, we will have special Valentine's Day stuff going on. Exactly what that's going to be, mum's the word. We ain't telling. You have to show up and find out. But one thing that we are doing is visiting our families who are in the long-term care facilities on Valentine's Day. You know, we bring our folks, you know, flowers and like that. And if you'd like to, if you have a loved one in a long-term care facility in the area, just give us a shout, and or, you know, you can call 888-463-2843. You can do it like that, or you can drop us an email with the person's name, name of the facility, and the room number. Of course, we need the room number, and we'll show up and drop off some a couple of team members will show up and drop off some flowers. Now, understand. Because I got, you know, someone called on this and said, well, you're going to load them up with all kinds of propaganda. No, we're not. It's just going to be I'll tell you what, it's just a rose and, you know, one of those watery tubes, you know, and we do bouquets for our families, but, you know, for everybody else. So, you know, it'll be a rose with, you know, just one of those, you know, with the Kitty Valentine on the thing. So, it's no problem there. Okie doke. Hey, we got a caller on the line. Good morning. Welcome to the David Carrier Show.
Good morning, David. I have a question regarding spousal benefit trust.
Sure.
Regarding a Medicaid application. I understand that that's irrevocable, but I've never heard of that before.
Well, I'm surprised.
Yes. I'm dealing with that issue. Probably around 300 in accountable assets. And I know, I understand from the Medicaid application, there's about 118 that's protected.
Right. Mm-hmm.
My question is on the remaining. An acquaintance of mine has a deferred compensation 457.
Mm-hmm.
I also have that.
Mm-hmm.
I understand. He advised that it was, in his case, he could set that aside or put that in a spousal benefit trust. Could you explain that?
Well, here's the thing. The it's a technique that we use when we have a married couple, okay? And spousal benefit trust, that's what we call it. Some people call them spousal annuity trust. There's different, you know, different terms. But the but in the law, it's called a solely for the benefit of trust. And it's not limited to excuse me, it's not limited to spouses. It can be for a minor child, you know, a minor child. It can be for a disabled child. Okay, you can set these up. Some states don't let you do it. Like I also practice in Massachusetts, and in MassHealth, which is what they call Medicaid out there, MassHealth will not let you do a solely for the benefit of trust for the spouse. You can do it for a disabled child, or for a minor child, but not for the spouse. So you gotta be careful, with this. You gotta make sure the rules apply. But the bottom line is that if you set up the trust in such a way, if you do it correctly, you can take the excess assets and put them into this trust. Now, you're talking about a tax qualified trustee, and right there, you can't put tax qualified assets into the trust. Now, that's not a. Most people view that as a settled law question, right? That you, there's no way you can do it, but actually you can. You get into the gray areas there, because I think you can.
Tax qualified would include like a retirement.
Right, exactly right. That's what I'm talking about. Thanks for interpreting there. Your IRAs, your 401ks, your 403bs, your 457s, all those things where you haven't paid the income tax on them yet is what I call a tax qualified. And you can't get a private letter ruling out of the IRS saying that it's okay unless the beneficiary, the owner of the account, is disabled. Now, that's not in the law that they have to be disabled, but if they are disabled, then you can go through the private letter ruling process and get a. But most custodians, most of the companies that hold those assets, you put it in a trust, bang, you get a 1099 saying that that was a taxable event. When we're doing a Medicaid application, it's extremely time sensitive. Okay, every month that goes by, boom, there goes another $9,000 of long-term care, right? They want their check, right? So rather than go through the months-long process of getting a PLR, so what difference does it make if I get the letter that says it's okay, I don't have to pay the tax, but I had to spend all the money anyway because, I had to spend it in that interim. So what we generally do in a case like that is we pull the money out, we pay the tax, and now it goes into the spousal benefit trust. I have to warn you that this is what I was talking about before. In the previous hour, when we talked about technology and all the rest of this stuff. These things get screwed up so often. Even attorneys screw them up. And we're dealing with one right now where we lost, an attorney put it together, and it looks now like we lost 3 months of coverage because of the timing of the payments, the way they came out. Bottom line is with these, you got to be careful on it. I'm getting the high sign now. I gotta go to break. But hang on, and we'll I'll wrap it up in the next segment. The thing is with some of these techniques, they can be they're like gasoline. They can be very valuable, very good, but they're dangerous. They can power your automobile from here to there, but at the same time, if you don't respect them, it'll blow up in your face. You've been listening to The David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
Strangers, you do something to me, something that simply mystifies me. Tell me, why should it be? You have the power to hypnotize me.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney. And lucky you, you found the Valentine's Day edition of the David Carrier Show. What does that mean? Well, it means it's the last show before Valentine's Day. Basically, that's all it means. Plus, we play Frank Sinatra's romantic hits throughout the show. So, it's special. That's special, all right. On Valentine's Day, we are making the rounds of the long-term care facilities, visiting our families who've got family members in there, just dropping off flowers and this and that. And we'd love to add you to the list if you have a loved one in a long-term care facility in the area. Simply drop us an email with the name of the facility, the person's name, and their room number. Promise no propaganda, just a flower with a little Valentine's Day on it. And we're going to be there anyway. We might as well stop by. Just a real quickie in and out. Hi, how you doing? See you later. Goodbye. And, if you'd like to get your loved one sign up for that, we'd be more than happy to make the visit. We're talking with a caller about spousal benefit trust, and the question was, how do these things work? Are we back online?
Yes.
Okay.
And the primaries, how do they work? And also, after the protected amount, is there anything else that can be protected?
Yeah, the beauty thing is that the way it works is this. When you go into a long-term care facility, you or your spouse, they look at all the assets of the couple together. You're in what they call an asset control group, and so they look at all the assets together. And prenuptial agreements have no bearing on it. Usual trust, the usual revocable trust people do, have no bearing on this. It's just whatever is in your name or your spouse's name counts on that initial asset assessment. Now, let's say you have $300,000. That was your example. Let's say you have $300,000 altogether of cash or countable assets, which would be anything besides house, car, and contents. Pretty much everything else is countable. And let's say you have $300,000. Maybe that's the cottage. Maybe it is just cash or whatever. What we call the community spouse is allowed to keep half of that to a maximum of roughly it's $117,000, all right? $117,000. So, that's how much the at-home spouse gets to keep. The rest has to be spent down. Now, in Michigan, we can put those additional funds into a spousal benefit trust, which is an irrevocable trust, which the grantor, that'd be you, cannot be the trustee the grantor cannot be trustee. Avoid the dangling participle there. But we can do that. But the thing is, with tax-qualified assets, those assets have to be pulled out of whatever account, whether it's a IRA, 401K, 457, 403B, whatever they are. You have to pull the assets out, pay the tax on them, and put them into the trust. Now, there is a rarely used technique to leave the assets in the tax-qualified account and move that to the irrevocable trust. But you can only do that with a private letter ruling. Otherwise, the custodian's just going to, hit you with a 1099, taxable event when you move it into the trust. And it takes so long to get one that it's just not cost-effective. So generally, we take it out, we pay the tax, we put the money in the account. Now, here's the deal. You have to be extremely careful about, because these trusts need to be paid out over the, it's almost like required minimum distributions, okay? But you have to be very, very careful in how you calculate them. You can't just use the regular life expectancy tables. There's a life expectancy table published by the Department of Human Services in the Bridges Eligibility Manual. That's the one you have to use, okay? And you have to be very careful about the timing of these of the payments that come out. And if you're not, you get months of disqualification. So am I being helpful here?
I think so, yes.
It's a very powerful tool. It's a great tool. We do use it frequently. It's not available, as I said before, it's not available in all states. Massachusetts, for example, it's what's called a solely for the benefit of trust, or SBO trust, not available there. But you know what? This kind of gets me back to what I was talking about in the first hour. We just came back from a conference, 45 other law firms from literally across the country, Alaska, Hawaii, everywhere. And, we're talking about the role of technology in providing these solutions. And it's like, yeah, technology is wonderful. I mean, whenever we, not only the word processing, but, I've put together some spreadsheets to help us figure out when the payments have to come out and how much, all the rest of this stuff. It's great stuff that, used to be, well, we never did it. Never did it longhand because it's too many variables. But when you use the software tools, it's very, very helpful, okay? But that doesn't that doesn't translate into, well, just feed the numbers in and boom, out comes the answer. It just doesn't work that way. So technology is very useful, but you need to know which one of these, and it varies, you know, you need to know which one of these tools to use in a given case. And then, yeah, like I said, we've got a case right now where it looks like we've, you know, somebody who may have been less experienced than they needed to be or whatever, still trying to figure out all the ins and outs of it. But, you know, it looks like we've lost 3 months of eligibility. Well, you know, that's like $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, boom, just like that, because you didn't, you know, you didn't put the numbers in right. You know, not quite that, but you didn't craft the document correctly. So,
You use it frequently, you mentioned. So, something that's okay.
It's a, you know, I like to say that there's no matter what you've got, right? You know, even crazy annuities and things, reverse mortgages and all the rest, all the tools in the toolbox. Now, some tools you don't use very often, but the spousal benefit trust is a hammer. You know, there are a lot of, you know, it's your 16-ounce claw hammer, you know what I mean?
Can a vehicle be placed in that?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, we put cottages and all kinds of assets. Go into the, you know, there's limitation on how large the homestead can be, on the value of the homestead. And so lots of times we've got farmers, you know, all this acreage plus the homestead. Well, we'll take the acreage and put it into the spousal benefit trust. Now you've got to deed the acreage out in increments, and it's, like I say, it gets kind of involved. But, you know, at the same time, it's a very powerful tool. Very powerful.
Well, very good. I think you answered my question. The best to you, your family, and your son.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Oh, and I should give you a Kevin update. They were out on the range, I forget if it was last week, week before. Anyway, he's coming down, somebody else is going up. Collision, fell down, broke his wrist. But he's very happy because they didn't evacuate him. He's like, no, I get to stay with my platoon. Like, okay.
Good. Well, keep us updated, too.
I will do that. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. We got another caller, and we got about 30 seconds, I think. Oh, 2 minutes. Okay. Plenty of time. Good morning. Welcome to the David Carrier Show. Hello. Is anybody there? See, that's another Frank Sinatra song, right? Is anybody there? Does anybody care? No, apparently not. Well, anyway, let me just remind you that Valentine's Day is coming up. We've got the Valentine's Day workshop with all kinds of special stuff going on. How special? And what exactly is it going to be? Well, we did pre-order the flowers, so there will be flowers, I can promise you that. But as far as the rest of it, you're just going to have to wait and see. Because, you know, we'll probably figure that out Thursday night. Because that's the way we do that kind of thing. But if you have a loved one in long-term care, okay, we do make the rounds on Valentine's Day. So if you have a loved one in long-term care and you'd like us to stop by with a Valentine and a flower, easy to do, just drop me an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com, meaning the name of the facility, the room number, and the person's name. Okay, if you give us those three things, then when we make making a round, so team members will be, you know, just a quickie, here you go, see you later, happy Valentine's Day. You don't have to, not like a timeshare pitch, okay? We're not going to do that to you. Just sort of a, hi, how you doing, and happy Valentine's Day. That's what we'll be doing on Friday. And can't wait to see you at a Life Plan Workshop. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
I've got you under my skin. I've got you. Night and day, you are the one. Only you need the moon or under the sun.
Welcome back to the David Carrier Show, and that's exactly how I feel about you, including you, Dan. Welcome to the David Carrier Show. Thanks for the persistence. How can we help?
Yes, David. I think I may have made a mistake titling things into my trust, and my attorney is retired. I can't contact him, and I was hoping you could answer my question.
Well, it's a lively legal discussion and not legal advice. So,
okay.
With that caveat, let's go ahead.
My, I'll use a false name here, but my trust is titled Dan J. Jones, Agreement of Trust, dated 1-20-2002.
Okay.
When I'm buying new life insurance, and I had to title the insurance into the trust, and I titled it into the trust as Dan J. Jones Trust, dated 1-20-2002. After that, I got to looking at the paperwork, and I other things I had titled that way, and I realized that the quitclaim title that he had made up for my home had the words Dan J. Jones, Agreement of Trust, and the Agreement of are two words that I had left out when I titled everything else into it. Are they, do they pick it close enough where that would raise a red flag? Would that present a problem if anything were to happen?
Well, you know, you like to get it right. I don't think that that's going to be a, that's not going to be a showstopper. I doubt it, because lots of times when we, you know, of course, we always use the correct name. But it's not at all unusual. It's not at all unusual for insurance companies or brokerage houses to cut down on the name. You know, it's not at all unusual for them to abbreviate or to take words out and things like that. So, if it doesn't say agreement of, I doubt that that's going to be much of an issue. I doubt it. But you've got plenty of time. So I just send it in and say, hey, you know, this is agreement of trust, not simply trust. The technical thing, actually, is you can't title things to a trust. The correct way to do it is to title it to the trustee of the Dan J. Jones. You know, so Dan J. Jones, trustee of the Dan J. Jones Trust. That's technically how it's supposed to go. But people all the time, they get it wrong. They just title it to the trust. And, it doesn't seem to have caused a major, major disruption. You know, I think everybody gets it. Even if you just say to the trust, but technically, that's not correct. Technically you should say to the trustee of the trust, not simply, to the trust.
Okay.
And since you got the time, you know.
Yeah, I'll take care of that.
Yeah.
I appreciate your time.
Hey, not a problem. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks a lot.
You betcha. You're listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney, reminding you that Valentine's Day is on Friday. What does that mean? That means we're having not one but two life plan workshops. These are, I think we're pretty close to full on them, but you might be able to get in. Just give us a call at 888-463-2843. All right, hit the number one, talk to a live person, and they'll sign you up. All kinds of neato things happening at the workshop. I cannot divulge what will be happening at the Life Plan Workshop because we haven't figured it out yet. But it'll be fun. at least I'll have fun. It's a good time. Also on Friday, also on Valentine's Day. Team members will be making the law firm. Team members will be making the rounds of the long-term care facilities. You know, bringing a little bit of cheer to our families that we work with. If you'd like to have us make a stop by your loved one, more than happy to do that. We don't pass out cards or anything like that. It's just a flower at the little Valentine. And if you'd like us to do that, we have to know. And the way we would know is by you telling us. And the way you would tell us is to drop an email, david@davidcarrierlaw.com. Okay? And in the email, let us know the person's name, the room number, and the facility. Okay? We don't go to all the facilities. I don't even know if that's true. If we don't go to all, we may go to all of them. But in any event, if you let us know the facility, the person's name, and the room number, then we can, you know, if we're in there already, we might as well just stop by and say hi. So, how about that? Just, drop us the email. That'd be fine. You can call the office and do the same thing. Alrighty. That's for Valentine's Day. Let's get to a couple of emails. We, haven't got to any emails yet. This is a good one. I want to name trust, quote, last name trust. I'm guessing they're Smith Trust, right? But attorney tells me omitting word revocable may cause confusion. Should I relent? I want to name our joint revocable trust simply, for example, last name trust, but my attorney tells me this may spell trouble down the line as people will not know if it is revocable or irrevocable. My position is that those who need to know will be getting the pertinent pages of the trust anyway, and the trust structure will be evident. Should I relent and include the word revocable in the name of the trust? Well, let me tell you, we never put revocable or irrevocable in the name of the trust. Never, ever. No reason for it, for exactly this person's explanation here. There's no need to. You know, we don't have to put that in there, and we don't. And if you did, it's not a there's no commitment. You could call it the the Smith family. You could call it the peanut butter and jelly agreement. You know, or the I don't know, the Archduke Ferdinand agreement. I don't know. Put whatever you want in there. You know, call it Mickey and Minnie's Great Adventure or something like that. You don't even have to call it a trust if you don't want to. You can call it whatever you want, because anybody who relies on it does need a certificate of trust, okay? The certificate of trust will have all the necessary provisions right there. Now, it's true that you might get people looking cross-eyed at it. I don't think for revocable, but if you're the Smiths and you call your trust the agreement between peanut butter and jelly under agreement dated January 1st, 2014. Yeah, you might get, what is this peanut butter jelly all about? Or, Bob and Sue, trustees of the peanut butter and jelly trust, PB&J trust. Well, some people might get a chuckle out of that. But I know folks, I know attorneys who never use the person's name. They're always coming up with goofy names for the trusts. In my practice, we generally use the last name, so Smith Family Trust, Smith Family Protection Trust, just so we know what the heck it is we're talking about. We don't have to keep referring back, it just makes it easier. But that's not a legal requirement. It's more convenience for us, convenience for the family. But you can name your trust whatever you want, and omitting the terms revocable, I completely disagree with that. We never use revocable or irrevocable in the trusts that we do. Let me just see if I can knock down a couple more here. Can a personal representative of a probated estate sue the interested parties for expenses beyond the value of the estate? The entire estate was depleted by attorney fees. That never happens. Can those at first stood to gain be asked now to share? No, they can't. You've been listening to the David Carrier Show. I'm David Carrier, your family's personal attorney.
You've been listening to The David Carrier Show, a lively discussion addressing your questions and concerns, but not legal advice. There is a big difference. So when making decisions that affect your family, your property, or yourself, the best advice is to seek good advice, specific to your unique needs. If you missed any of today's show or would like additional information about the law offices of David Carrier, please visit David Carrier Law.